by finding out a little bit more about the Kundalini Yoga meditation that you teach. Could you tell us about it?
It's a form of meditation that I learned many years ago from a very great master. And the whole purpose of it is to teach people how to build a system inside themselves that's strong enough to be able to connect with spirit, higher energy, and to use it practically in the world. Because if it's not used practically in the world, it's basically kind of a waste of time. So the kind of meditation I teach develops foundation, it develops the heart, quiets the mind, it connects human beings with a higher force of energy in the universe, and more than anything, it quiets the chaos in people. I mean, we have minds that never shut up. We have emotions that are basically like quicksand. You know, we have sexual energy that really, you know, drives us crazy sometimes. You combine the three of those energies, you have the local insane asylum. So what I try to do is teach people how to turn that chaos into energy that really gives them life. And when people learn how to do that, they become masters of their inner selves, and they can overcome the one person that's keeping them from being happy, and that's themselves. So the kind of meditation I teach is basically grounded in this type of work. I learned years ago that if we work on ourselves, if we build a connection with spirit, but we live like kind of leaves in the wind on earth, you know, we're just floating around without any capacity to use that connection practically, it means we never work out our lives, we never work out our karma, you know, and we're always kind of off kilter. So we have to learn how to be balanced in the world, and we have to learn how to also connect with a spiritual nourishment, you know, that our systems are literally starving for, that absolutely essential to build a strong inner life. So that's basically what I teach.
So this is the meditation practice that you've taught across the world.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, why choose to write about your experiences in Israel?
Well, I didn't even think about choosing to do that until I went there. I was invited in 2006 to go to Jerusalem, where there's a group that practice the kind of meditation that I teach, in order to teach there. And a few days before I was going to leave, a war broke out in Israel, you know, between Hezbollah and the Israelis. And I was going to Jerusalem, and I was going to take my daughter with me, but I had a big problem with my ex-wife about bringing her there. And I finally said, okay, I won't take her. But I decided that I wanted to go, and I wanted to be there while all this was going on to see what it's like. So I went to Jerusalem, and 100 miles away, they're fighting a war. It's like a war going on between, you know, in Eugene, you know, Oregon, and you're in Portland. And I spent 10 days there. And the most amazing thing was that Jerusalem, while this war was going on, was one of the most peaceful places I'd ever been in my life. And the only way that I even know there was a war going on is I would turn on CNN in the afternoon and watch the news and discover that people were fighting 100 miles away and killing each other, you know, bombs going off, rockets going off, et cetera, et cetera. I went to, you know, one of my favorite foods is Mideastern, Lebanese, you know, Palestinian type food. And myself and a student of mine named Eli Malki, we went to Arab villages, you know, to have, you know, wonderful, what they call meza. They would bring out these salads and beautiful way to eat. And every restaurant we went to, we were just welcomed like we were part of their family. And meanwhile, 100 miles away, the Jews and the Muslims were killing each other. And this, to me, was extraordinary. I mean, I would walk into a restaurant, and a guy would come up with a big smile on his face and welcome, come, you know, we will give you great food. And they did. They provided incredible service, incredible food. There was never a sense of any hostility in one of the restaurants we went into. And I practically ate in a Mideastern restaurant run by Muslims just about every day I was in Jerusalem, especially for lunch. And this is what went on. And I said, Stuart, this is remarkable. It's 100 miles away, they're killing each other. And yet the Jewish people and the Islamic people are living here like brothers, you know? It's like everyday life is no different than people living together in the United States. And I said, this is really worthy of a book. I said, this is something extraordinary. And when I got back from Israel, I sat down and wrote the book, Light in Jerusalem. And I called it Light in Jerusalem because there is a light in Jerusalem that is completely remarkable. And Jerusalem itself is one of the most extraordinary cities I've ever been in. There's something so deeply spiritual there. And it's the cradle of all Western religion. It's the cradle of Islam. It's the cradle of, you know, Judaism, Christianity, you know. And in the book, I talked about so many different experiences I had with all these different religions. Like there's one section of the book where I talk about going to Bethlehem, the place where, you know, Jesus was born. There's a church there. And I talk about the most amazing thing that happened to me there, where I was standing on a line, a long line, and this is not while in 2006, this is like 10 years before, and I'm standing on a long line waiting to get into the museum, and on the walls are all these paintings from Byzantium and, you know, mosaics and beautiful works of art, and the line was very long, and I came to a place where there was a stairwell going down into some kind of catacomb. And I said to my friend who I was with, I said, look, excuse me, I want to go down that stairwell. I don't know what's there. Just stay in line so we don't lose our place. And I'll be back in about 5 or 10 minutes. So I went down into this catacomb, walked in there, and my knees buckled. The energy was so powerful. It was so strong that I just had to sit down and meditate. I didn't have any idea where I was, what I was doing there, except I sat down and I started to meditate. And I could feel a power going through me that was completely amazing. And I was sitting there for about 5 minutes, and suddenly this group of Romanian tourists came in with an Israeli tour guide that was talking to them in English. And she started talking about this being the place which was the manger where Jesus was born. And I said, oh my God. I said, this is amazing. You know, and I'm not really Christian, and I don't have a deep following of any religion except spirit, you know, which I think when a person has a spiritual life, God just manifests for them everywhere. And I completely was blown away by that experience. It was amazing. So, you know, it's things like that that fill the book. I had the same kind of experience in the Dome on the Rock, which is an Islamic, one of the most sacred mosques in Islam. You know, the same type of experience where there's a big boulder there, which is the place in the Jewish religion where Abraham was supposed to have sacrificed, was going to sacrifice Isaac. And in Islam, it's the place where Muhammad rose into heaven. And it was a very sacred place. And I'm standing there completely in a state of meditation, and I'm seeing this incredible rock. And then you look up and there's a dome, like a mandala that takes you infinite into the universe. And I said, Stuart, this is no different than the meditation you practice. It's the exact same thing that they're depicting in this place. So I'm standing there and I'm meditating. And I said, you know, you better sit down or you're going to fall down. So I sat down, and suddenly from across the dome, mosque, some Islamic guy comes running up to me, screaming at me that I'm sacrilege. I said, my God, I'm trying to pray to do a sacred thing in that place and really experience the depth and the profound. And here I am being, you know, forced to stand up by who told me that I was creating a sacrilege by not being Islamic and sitting in the dome. But it didn't matter, you know, what I experienced there was so amazing because it really taught me that the source of all religions is the same. The source of all the religions is spiritual energy, connection with, if you call it God, higher energy, you know, whatever one wants to call it. And that when one gets down to the absolutely fundamental roots of every religion, you're going to find the exact same teaching. And it has to do with love. It has to do with opening. It has to do with the experience of a higher power, you know, and allowing that energy to come into you and nurture you. And I mean, the book is full of stories that I went through while I was in Jerusalem. And meanwhile, you know, I'm writing the book and there's a war going on, you know, and one of my students, his wife's brother, had to go fight in Lebanon while this was, and his wife was completely freaked out. His mother-in-law was like beside herself, and he didn't have to go. He had a wife and two children, and he said, I can't not go. The people going are my friends. They're in my battalion. I feel totally obligated to be with them and to fight with them in this place. So this whole almost contradictory type of energy going on there, from the Dome on the Rock to the, you know, church in Bethlehem to the wars going on. And I said, my God, I mean, this is one of the most amazing places on the planet Earth, one of the most deeply spiritual and at the same time one of the craziest, because of this stupid conflict that goes on because one person is Islam and another is born Jewish, you know? I mean, it's just ridiculous, the whole thing. And yet it doesn't stop. There was one, there's also a story in there. When I first, my first trip to Jerusalem, to Israel, I was with a student of mine. This is about 1981. And I'm with a student of mine and we go to the Western Wall and we're standing on a rampart looking over the Western Wall. And I said to this friend of mine, or this student of mine, here's the reason there will never be peace in the Middle East. So he said, what are you talking about? I said, look at this place. I said, here is the most sacred place in all of Judaism, the Western Wall, right? Where every Jewish person is supposed to come and pray. You know, right on top of it is the Dome on the Rock, the second holiest mosque in all of Islam, or something like that. And I said, and the Jewish people believe for the Messiah to come, they have to rebuild the Temple of Solomon. And the Temple of Solomon is on the other side of this wall that was destroyed thousands of years ago. And in order to rebuild it, they have to destroy the second holiest mosque in all of Islam. I said, they have World War III if they would try to do that. So I said, here, right at the source of both of these religions, they're fighting a war. And I said, this is why there'll never be peace in the Middle East. I said, it has nothing to do with the politics. The politics is a bunch of crap, just crazy people, you know, fighting. But this is something that is so rooted in both religions that unless that changes, unless right at the core of both religions, they begin to realize they're just relatives. You know, they both basically believe the exact same thing, this war will never come to an end. It's going to go on forever. And it has. I mean, I was there in 1981. There was a war. 2000, they're still fighting over there, killing each other. And it's just crazy. Because right at the root of both religions, there's conflict. So until that changes, you understand, there's no way there'll ever be peace in the Middle East. No way. Because there's always the fanatical people. We got to tear down the dome in order to rebuild the Temple of Solomon. We want the Messiah to come. What they don't understand is the Messiah is here. They just don't see him. The Messiah is in the life of every human being, every person, you know, but and all that's missing is our consciousness to recognize that everything we need for enlightenment is already here. But we're projecting that we got to rebuild temples, we got to tear down this, we got to fight this, we got to take over the world in order for our religions to prevail. And it's all nonsense. It's just nonsense. It's just a matter of people that have no consciousness. So all of this is in my book, because being in Jerusalem, which is supposedly the most holy city for how many religions, brought all of this out of me.
You spoke about the experience you had on the Dome of the Rock, of this idea that behind every guiding religion, there's a primary source of energy. Is this something that really came to you through your experiences in Jerusalem, or is it more through your experiences in life?
Yes, you know, this is something that came to me 30 years before I went to Jerusalem. I mean, from my earliest memories, all I knew is that the source of all religions is exactly the same thing. When I was in my 20s, I read the Bhagavad Gita, the Bible, the Vedas, the Quran, all these books I was reading, trying to educate myself in spiritual paths, you know, Taoism, this, and I began to realize it's all the same stuff. You know, at that point, I wasn't conscious enough to apply it to my life. I had to meet a great master who taught me how to do that. But I knew this long before I was ever in Israel, or that all religious, the source of all religion is it's like the sun. It gives off millions of rays of light, but it all comes from one source. And all that's missing, as I'll repeat, is just people's consciousness. And if people learn how to wake up inside, they begin to see this, and you know, and they stop fighting with each other. Say, hey, well, this is just a bunch of crap. We just got to love each other because we all come from the same place. We're all going to the same place. And meanwhile, between coming and going, there's this enormous soap opera that goes on where everybody is conflicted with everybody else because everybody has an opinion about the way everybody else should live. And I think that is one of the great stupidities of the world, everybody's opinion about the right way to live. If you don't fit into my little conceptualized box, I'm going to fight with you. You know, you're going to go to hell. You're not, you know, you're not going to be what enlightened. You're not, you know, it's a bunch of stuff.
When you brought this practice in, what sort of response did you get from people?
In Israel?
Mm-hmm.
The ones that came, it was amazing. They loved it.
Did you find, was there relatability about the idea that you spoke of with the conflict happening and yet the fact that it was peaceful actually in the city that you were in?
Well, people, they, I mean, Ellie kept telling me this. He'd say, Stuart, if you don't turn on CNN, you'll never know we're at war. That's what he kept telling me. And I, when I was there, I said, Ellie, you're right. We're sitting in his garden and it's just beautiful. He told me this, you'll never know we're at war. And I experienced it and I talked about it and people, you know, were in total agreement. At the same time, his wife's brother was over in Lebanon, South Lebanon, fighting, you know? So there was a lot of tension. You know, and I think that tension went all through of Israel. You know, you have your sons, your daughters, you're fighting a war somewhere with the potential that I can get killed. So there was tension. But other than that, you understand the atmosphere, the light, the beauty of the place, you know, it was so amazing that it was stronger than, you know, all these fears that were in people.
Was that light that you found there something? Did it exist in every trip that you'd taken to Israel before?
Yes. There's a light there that I've never seen anywhere in the world. It's just beautiful. It's the desert. It's the sky is always clear. You know, there's a kind of light there that's magical. It's just magical, the place.
And could you talk about your experience coming in as somebody, a foreigner from another country, coming in with a spiritual practice that doesn't relate to the major religions present in the land? Did you feel that at all in your experience there?
Nothing like that. Because I just came and there's a group of people and I did what I do with them, worked with them. You know, they always set up lectures for me to talk, public lectures, and I would, you know, just do what I do. When I'm here in Portland, I do the same thing I did in Israel. And just share with them my life's work, what I've experienced in my life. And I usually very rarely talk about religion and politics when I teach this thing because I want to teach people how to get strong inside, how to deal with all the kind of insanity that goes on in life, how to be big enough inside themselves to really be able to consciously, you know, allow what they learn in life to help them grow every day. And I don't get involved too much with politics and because, look, as long as I can remember, the world has always been crazy. I can't remember a day in my life where there hasn't been a war somewhere on the planet Earth, not one day. And it's always been nuts. But the missing factor is that people haven't developed an inner strength that enables them to do it. And if people would learn to work on themselves and build that inner strength, a lot of that insanity would disappear. But go tell that to 7 billion people. You know, each one of them has an idea in their mind about the way the world is supposed to be, and everybody's trying to fit everybody into their reality, and nobody fits. So you have endless conflict. But if people would learn how to build foundation in themselves, how to open their hearts, how to get their minds quiet, how to understand that life is not the enemy, life is the teacher, and life is teaching us every minute what we have to do inside ourselves to grow, so that suddenly, instead of life being the enemy, life becomes a good friend. And we need that teaching as a constant reminder that we haven't arrived yet, that we have to build a strong inner life, you know, that we have to keep growing inside in order to be capable of living in the world and being happy people.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Portland, and we're here with guest author Stuart Perrin, an American master of Kundalini yoga, talking about his newest book, Light in Jerusalem. On that note, Stuart, I wanted to ask you about a particular story that you'd mentioned in your book about teaching a meditation class and also during the class hearing the sound of bombs going off in the distance. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about what that experience was like for you and what you brought out of it.
Well, it wasn't bombs, it was guns going off in the distance. And, well, the first thing I had to do was just detach myself. I didn't want any judgments, anything. And then I discovered after the meditation class is that when Palestinian people have marriages, they shoot guns into the air. And that's all it was about. It wasn't people shooting at each other. It was just, there was a marriage going on. And you hear the sound of guns going off. And that basically is what happened. And while it was happening, I just said, Stuart, stay quiet. Don't get involved. You don't know what... And afterwards, I asked Ellie, what was that all about? He said, somebody's getting married. So they shoot guns when somebody gets married, you know? So it was, to me, no big deal, you know? I mean, it was just another reason to go deeper and not to judge and not to have any fear that anything was going to happen. It was just to go deeper, and then I found out what was going on. And nobody in the room even moved while that was, you know, they all were doing very profound meditation while that was going on.
It sounds like regardless, it was a profound experience.
It was a profound experience.
So speaking of the connection and the light that you saw while you were in Jerusalem, what's one of the stories that really sticks in your memory to this day about what that felt like for you when you were there?
Well, just honestly, everyday life. Everyday life was, as I explained before, going to restaurants and being welcomed by Palestinians, you know, who are supposed to be great enemies of the Israel. And here they are welcoming you like you're their brother. Come, sit down. And then coming out with these fantastic meals. I don't know if you've ever had a mezza. But a mezza is like this huge tray of salads they bring, and they cover the table with it, you know, and you have like 20 different salads, and then you have chicken, and you have this and that. And I mean, it was fantastic. And I think that to me was the most wonderful thing, that in the daily living, how these people interact with each other and how it's really no different than living in the United States where people have to interact with each other. And they know, look, I need to feed my family. I'm running a restaurant. The Israelis come to this restaurant. I can't fight with them, or they're not going to come back. So, and they come and they welcome you like guests. And one of the incredible things in Islam is that a guest is God. And you welcome a guest as if God has walked into your house. And I always found that to be an amazing thing. You know, because it's something that all of us need to learn. A guest is God. I remember a story when I was in India, and I had a very good friend, and I used to do, you know, a lot of business with him, and we'd run around Delhi, you know, Mumbai together, and also all over India. And he invited me to his in-laws' house, his wife's parents' house, for brunch. And I'll never forget, I walked in the door, and there were five men in the living room that all looked like Osama bin Laden. And I walked into the living room and I said, oh my God. I said, you're a Jewish guy from the Bronx. You know, what? What's going to happen? And they were so kind to me. They were so generous and so hospitable. And they kept asking me about what I teach and the meditation. And it was just, and then when we sat down to eat, there was this huge salver in the middle of a table, big round platter full of food, and you eat with your hands. You know, and I'm sitting there and eating, and they would always put the best pieces of all the food in front of me. And these were, you know, I'm talking about amazing, you know, that there's this thing in that religion that's, I guess, is God. They have to be treated with the ultimate of respect. So I think the practical daily living while I was in Jerusalem while this war was going on, to me, was one of the most amazing things. To see the hospitality in people, the love in people, to feel that energy from them, that they weren't really enemies. They were just human beings trying to get through the day, making a life, feeding their families, you know, like people anywhere else in the world.
To finish on a slightly different note, you've been teaching Kundalini Yoga now for 45 years or so.
A long time.
And that's not something that most people do. So I'm wondering, what can you share about one of the pivotal life lessons that you enabled you to continue doing this work for as long as you have?
It's very simple, Isabel. It saved my life. I mean, when I was a kid, I was your age. You understand, I was deeply unhappy. I was depressed all the time. I was running around the world. I was hitchhiking all over Europe and Africa and on my way to India with every trip I made there. I was looking for something. But the unhappiness, the profound, I was into drugs. I was into anything that would give me some sense of spirituality. Nothing worked. And I'd go to teachers and they'd tell me, love, peace, and eat vegetables. And I would say, love, peace, and eat. What about my crazy head? What about my emotions? What about the sexual energy that does nothing but create problems in my life? They would tell me, love, peace, and eat vegetables. Read the Bible. Read the Bhagavad Gita. You will. And I tried, and nothing worked. And then when I was 25 years old, I met a great master. And of course, the funniest part about it is you go all over the world, and you find him in your hometown. You know, so I met this man, and I started studying with him. And he was the first person who showed me an actual technique that I could use to transform my depression, my unhappiness, and all of that chaos that was in me, all of that troubled Stuart, into a person who was capable of getting his heart open, feeling joy, feeling love, and above everything, feeling a profound connection with spirit. And it saved my life. The day I met him, I knew I was either going to commit myself to a sanitarium or maybe kill myself. I just couldn't deal with it anymore. And then from that day, I was with him for 6 years. And the training I got, learning the craft of meditation, learning how to use it to build strong inner foundation, learning how to get my heart open and to keep my heart open, learning how to do that basically saved my life. And I teach today, and I've been teaching for over 40 years out of sheer gratitude.
Well, thank you, Stuart, for everything you've had to share today.
Thank you, Isabel. Thank you for interviewing me.
I don't know if I know all the words or not, but I'm going to try to sing it for you.
In celebration of our 50th anniversary, KABU is teaming up with the Mississippi Records Music and Film Series. KABU will be hosting Wild in the Streets on Wednesday, November 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. A freaked-out 60s exploitation movie, Wild in the Streets follows Max Frost and the Troopers, a psychedelic rock band that managed to take over the United States after the voting age is lowered to 16. The new regime legalizes all drugs, puts everyone over 30 into acid re-education camps, and creates a new hippie fascist utopia. Again, that's Wild in the Streets on Wednesday, November 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. Thank you.
distanced yourself from the whole thing.
Welcome to Black Book Talk. This is Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman, here with
O.B. Hill. With